My message tonight is taken from 1 Peter chapter 4, verse 12. 1 Peter 4, the 12th verse. Beloved, do not think it strange concerning the fiery trial which is to try you, as though some strange thing happened to you. Now, we've been looking at this big section in 1 Peter, which started in chapter 2, verse 11, and is going to end at the end of this chapter. And it's all about how do I live as a Christian in a world that opposes me. And up till now, Peter has just looked at opposition in general. So every one of us will suffer some kind of opposition as a believer. Paul said, yea, if anyone will live godly, he will suffer. So that may be emotional, psychological, not necessarily physical opposition. But from verse 12 to the end of chapter 4, Peter is going to deal with persecution in a very specific way. Because Peter himself was going to be executed. The Apostle Paul was going to be executed. John, he lived to a ripe old age. But the church was about to enter into a period of physical persecution. It was under the Emperor Nero that it started. Up till now, the Romans hadn't thought of the church as something to be persecuted. They just treated them as a sect in Judaism. But very soon, and Peter is prophesying here, the Roman authorities are going to unleash terrible persecution upon the church. And Peter has a pastor's heart. Didn't Jesus commission him to feed his sheep? Peter says, beloved. Isn't that good? Beloved. And I'm here with you. You think this persecution is just going to come upon you? I'm going to be crucified. Beloved. Now, I love that. He isn't writing from some ivory tower, just giving his thoughts on how a Christian should deal with persecution. He's in the fire with them. And the way that Peter describes persecution, the fiery trial, is harking back to the reading that we had. Meshach, Shadrach, and Abednego put in that fiery furnace because they would not conform to what the authorities wanted. Now, I'm no prophet, but we could quite likely, in our lifetime, see a time of physical persecution coming upon us. Do you agree? We pastors could be arrested for preaching the gospel, and even we as believers could be imprisoned, and that may be on the horizon. So what we have to do is follow Peter's instruction here and ask, how can we be ready for such a time? Now, please, don't misunderstand me. We're not to kind of look forward to a good dose of persecution. You listen to some Christians and they give the impression we've got to pray that the Lord will send his church a time of persecution so that we'll all get purified and woken up. Well, yes. That will happen if God allows persecution, but we're not to pray for it. But what we are to do is be ready for it when it comes. Now, I'm speaking honestly here. I don't think I could go to the stake for Jesus Christ at the moment then. But we don't have to, do we? He gives grace in the situation. And if persecution was to come, I believe just as strongly that our Savior would give us the necessary strength to stand. But that doesn't mean to say that we shouldn't be prepared. So Peter, in these verses, is going to give us several things that we can do. But I only want us to look at verse 12 tonight. We may not be long. He just puts it negatively. Don't be surprised. Can you get that? Don't be surprised. Don't think it's strange. That's the first thing I want to say. Do you like watching Dad's Army? I think it's one of my favourite comedies. And there's a character in Dad's Army. Is it Captain Jones? If anything was happening, he would go around, running around saying, don't panic, don't panic. But the problem was, the way he was urging people not to panic was actually making them even more panicky. Well, Peter is saying, don't panic. Don't think it's strange. Now, what does he mean by that? Well, he means something quite remarkable. We tend to think, don't we, that if everything is going well for us, that that's how it ought to be. That things are right between me and God because providence is smiling upon me. But actually, isn't that a subtle kind of prosperity teaching? What is health and wealth gospel? The prosperity gospel, as it's termed, states that as Christians, we are not just blessed spiritually, but we can be blessed in every other area of life. Of course, God does do that. But the problem we have is this. We get into a mindset where we equate health, wealth, success with God's blessing all the time. And if we don't have those things, in other words, if things start going wrong, then God must be frowning upon us, and we are not right spiritually. But what Peter is saying here is actually the reverse may be true. Don't think it's strange if you are suffering. Think it's the norm. And actually, we should think it's strange if we don't have any opposition. My favorite book, Pilgrim's Progress. After Christian, I talked about The House Beautiful. Two Sundays ago, he enjoyed fellowship there in the House Beautiful. Do you know what happened afterwards? Those of you who know the book. The House Beautiful was on top of the hill. Afterwards, Christian went down, down, down into, was it the Valley of Humiliation? And who did he meet in the Valley of Humiliation? Apollyon, the devil. He had an attack. He had opposition. After blessing, the devil came. And don't we find that from experience? I find if I've been given liberty on a Sunday, that the devil will have a good go at me on Sunday night. And if you have a time of blessing where God draws near to you, don't think it strange if simultaneously sometimes with blessing or afterwards you go through opposition. I'm sometimes scared of praying for revival. Are you scared of asking God to pour his spirit upon us so that numbers are converted? Because hand in hand with that will come opposition. I'm sure of that. So that's the first thing. Don't be surprised. So don't think it's strange when you are suffering. Don't believe in a prosperity gospel. Secondly, anticipate it, anticipate it. I used to have a phase as a boy when I played golf. Have you ever played golf? Maybe when I get to retire, I'll take it up again. And the Ryder Cup has just been. And one year, I don't think it was this year, the Europe team in the Ryder Cup, they were having a very bad day on the last day of the tournament. And I think they won. They still won. And they were interviewed afterwards, or the captain was. And he was asked, how did you manage to win? And you were going through such a bad patch on the final day of the competition. And this is what he said, that the night before, they had anticipated difficult situations. They'd run through it in their minds. They discussed together what they would do if they found themselves going through a difficult patch. And there's a saying which says, to be forewarned is to be forearmed. And brothers and sisters, I believe there is much good to be had in preparing ourselves mentally for a time of persecution. Now, doesn't Peter just do that throughout his letter? What about 1 Peter chapter 1? It was a while ago when we looked at this. Verse 6 of 1 Peter 1, this is not prosperity teaching. In this you greatly rejoice, though now for a little while, if need be, you have been grieved by various trials. Isn't that a good description of what it's like when you're being opposed? It's as if you're attacked on every front and you are just got at. Grieved. And chapter 2, verse 21, he puts it, for this you were called, because Christ also suffered for us, leaving us an example that you should follow his steps. Have you ever thought of that? When you're going through difficulties. So I'm extending this message, not just to physical persecution, but to any kind of opposition. When we're going through it, we are just following the steps of our Master. I find that encouraging. When I have to go walking in some part of Scotland, I can't go by myself. I'm not experienced enough. I take somebody with me who knows the terrain. And do you know what I'm doing? I'm following in his footsteps. What did Paul do? Not just Peter, Paul, the great apostle of the Gentiles. They saw conversions in their first missionary journey. I'm reading from Acts chapter 14. And Paul went back after a few months to those infant churches, and he wanted to encourage them, as we pastors want to do. That's why I'm in this pulpit, believe it or not. I want to encourage you. And how did Paul encourage them? Verse 22 of Acts 14, strengthening, that's what encouragement means, to strengthen the hands and the arms, strengthening the souls of the disciples, exhorting them to continue in the faith and saying, we must, through much tribulations, enter the kingdom of God. Isn't that strange? Encouraging one another means to forewarn one another about difficulties. It's not to say to a new convert, look here, you've just entered into something that's going to be really tough, and it's going to get worse. And no, it's not that. But it's just to give them the complete picture. There are mountaintops of spiritual joy, but there are valleys of spiritual depression as well. To be forewarned is to be forearmed. And what about Jesus? His last sermon before he was betrayed, John chapter 15. I'm just reading some extracts here. There are many verses in his last sermon. John 15, verse 20, that should suffice. Remember the word that I said to you. Not now, maybe, but when you're in the fire, remember, a servant is not greater than his master. If they persecuted me, they will also persecute you. If they kept my word, they will keep yours also. So don't think it's strange. Be forewarned. Be ready. Anticipate. And then one last thing. Look at the way Peter put it. Let me get the verse again. Beloved, do not think it strange concerning the fiery trial which is to try you. We'll come to that later, but not tonight. As though some strange thing happened to you. Happened. Good word at. Happened. Not by chance. That's how the world uses the word happen. But by God's sovereign will. Now, do we see everything coming from God? John Newton said, there are no second causes with God. Everything ultimately comes from him. Not in the sense that God is the author of sin, but I'm going to give you that famous verse, Romans 8:28. We know All things work together for the good of them that are called of God. All things, good things, pleasant things, difficult things, persecution, even sinful things, they are all for our ultimate good. And didn't you catch that in the reading? What Daniel's three friends said to King Nebuchadnezzar, who threatened them with the fiery furnace. Did you get it? They say, O Nebuchadnezzar, we have no need to answer you. Our God, whom we serve, is able to deliver us from the burning fiery furnace, and he will deliver us from your hand, O King. So God will keep his people, but that doesn't always mean that we're going to be kept alive, does it? It means that he keeps our souls. I know in whom I have believed and am persuaded that he's able to keep that which I've committed unto him, my soul. So Daniel's three friends went on to say, but if not, in other words, if we die in that fire, let it be known to you, O King, that we do not serve your gods, nor will we worship him. God in control. Whether we are kept alive or whether we die, we live in God's hands. And that's the only place of safety. Oh, my friends, I'm speaking to myself as much as to you. Do you see God's hand, not just in the good things, but even in the bad things? Do you know what this does? You know the saying of evangelicals, there's too much jelly. There's too much jelly in the evangelicals. What this will do is give you some backbone. It'll put iron into your soul. They were young men, weren't they? Those three friends of Daniel. But they stood. They stood in the fiery furnace. Can I give you a historical example? A few thousand years later, in Oxford. Have you been to Oxford? To Broad Street in Oxford? If you go to Broad Street, there's an X in the middle of the road. Do you know what that marks? In the Protestant Reformation, during the time of Bloody Mary, people were burnt at the stake at that point. They were burnt for believing what we are believing. That's the fiery furnace that Christians endured in this country. I want to mention two characters. You may have heard of them. Nicholas Ridley and Hugh Latimer. I think Nicholas Ridley was an academic. Hugh Latimer was the Bishop of Worcester. And they were condemned to be burnt at the stake. And do you know what they did? They encouraged one another. They anticipated this, and they saw in this God's good hand. Let me quote both of them. I didn't realize this. Both of them encouraged one another. And this was as they were on the stake. Ridley embraced Latimer. And he said, be of good heart, brother, for God will either assuage, stop the fury of the flame, or else strengthen us to abide it. So they're not being naive. They're not saying God is going to deliver us out of this. We're going to become alive. No, no. God will, perhaps. But if not, he'll give us the strength. And then as they light the fire, we all know these words, don't we? Latimer turned to Ridley and said, be of good cheer, Ridley, and play the man. I like that. You don't have to be a man. You can be a woman as well. Play the man. We shall this day, by God's grace, light up such a candle in England as I trust will never be put out. Those two men lost their lives. They burnt for the Lord. And do you know what happened as a result? This is God's good hand. Using that bad circumstance, King James brought out a Bible, which we are still using today. Peter was writing to Christians who were about to go not to a fiery furnace, but to the amphitheater. Do you know what Nero and other emperors would do? they would unleash the lions on Christians, not just pastors, bishops, but on women, children. And God gave them grace to face the lions. Do you know what those Christians considered martyrdom as? Promotion. The final crown. I've never been to Rome, but I've been told that they sometimes say when they take people around the various sites, the amphitheatre there, the dust there, it's all Christians. The blood of the martyrs is the seed of the church. Persecution didn't stop the church. It exploded in growth. Now, I know we are not in that situation, but can I use from the greater to the lesser argument? I don't know what's facing you this week. It's probably not lions. It's probably not a fiery furnace. But it is going to be something that is oppressing you and maybe something that is causing you grief. Can you follow Peter's example and say, this isn't strange. It's not strange. I'm following Christ's footsteps. He suffered, I will suffer. And I'll see God's hand in it. I can see it at the moment. When Churchill lost the general election after the Second World War, somebody tried to encourage him by saying, it's a blessing in disguise. And Churchill said, well, it must be greatly disguised because I can't see much of the blessing at the moment. And maybe that's you. You can't see much of God's good hand. But believe, believe, that's faith, that he will work good out of it. And arm yourself. Be courageous. Play the man. Can I finish with this? I did a children's talk with it. I've never used it in a sermon. I came across it in India when Bhaskar Rao was preaching. And the sermon was only about 5 minutes long. And they said afterwards it was short but sweet, short but sweet. And the illustration that Bhaskar gave was a story he'd learned from childhood, not a Christian story. It's from the Mughal period in India when the Muslim emperors ruled. And it's a story about a king and his courtier, and they were good friends. Many of you will have heard it as a children's talk, but I'm going to finish with it because it helps. And they would have sword fights together. And one day, the courtier accidentally chopped off the king's thumb. And the king was angry with him. And the courtier tried to encourage him by saying, it's all right, master, all things work together for good. But it didn't do anything to the king. He threw his courtier into prison. A few years later, the king went on a hunting trip to a wild part of the country. He got lost, and he was caught by the surrounding people, and they were cannibals, and they were going to offer the king as a sacrifice. And they realized, just before they offered him as a sacrifice, that he didn't have his thumb, and they could only offer a perfect sacrifice. So they let him go. And the king suddenly remembered the words of his courtier. All things work together for good. If he hadn't chopped off my thumb, I would have been dead. So he rushes back to the palace, and the first thing he does is release his courtier from prison and says the story to him. And you know what the courtier said? True, my lord, everything does work together for good. Because if I hadn't been imprisoned and chopped off your thumb, I would have been accompanying you on that hunting trip. And we would have been killed. All things work together for good, for the king and for his courtier. So whatever situation you are in, you may be metaphorically in prison, God will see that one day some good will come out of it. may we be encouraged. Beloved, I'm speaking as a fellow brother. And let us arm ourselves to stand for Jesus Christ, for his name's sake. Amen.